Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but
yeah, we sure did. We started to burn way too many things we found. That's the beautiful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, our wonderful Solartopia theme song. Back for another show. This is going to be a full hour in Solartopia, talking about a fading, fast fading, but extremely dangerous technology, nuclear power. 100 reactors still operating in the United States, about a little under 400 worldwide, thanks to the shutdown of the 54 reactors still operable, allegedly operable, in Japan in the wake of Fukushima. The one good thing that's come from Fukushima is that we have had those 54 reactors shut since the plant went down. So six are permanent, and then the other 48 we're fighting over. The extreme right-wing, militaristic, anti-environment Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, has just called for new elections. I guess he thinks he can win, him and Netanyahu. And he's trying to reopen those reactors. But the people of Japan have been very successful in resisting the reopening of the reactors in Japan. Thankfully, knock on wood, and let's hope that they can get rid of this guy, Shinzo Abe. He's absolutely terrible. He's put in a state secrets act with the support of the United States to clamp down on free speech in Japan and to clamp down on reporting from Fukushima. He wants the other reactors opened, as mentioned. He's very militaristic and a very dangerous guy. So let's do what we can in whatever department we can to get nonviolently, of course, Shinzo Abe out of office in Japan. Just as the first seaborne radiation from Fukushima is arriving on the West Coast, it came a long time ago, 3.5 years ago, actually, or more, when dating to 3/11/11, when the airborne radiation from Fukushima came there. And we're going to talk today to a guy, a hero of the planet, who has helped shut two reactors in California, and hopefully is going to be instrumental in shutting two more. My old buddy from the Greenpeace days, now at Friends of the Earth, Damon Moglen. Are you with us, Damon?
Hey, how are you today?
I'm great, Damon. Damon, how are you? So you are speaking to us from the belly of the beast, I believe. You're in Washington, D.C., is that right?
It is indeed. Feels like the belly of the beast, more ways than one.
Yeah, especially on a gray day like today. But tell us, Damon, you've been on the anti-nuclear case for a long, long time. There were people fighting the two San Onofre reactors between L.A. and San Diego for decades. And suddenly, we hit just the right button. Now, we're looking for the same to flip that off switch at the two reactors at Diablo Canyon as well. We are joined by Linda Seeley. Linda, are you there?
Hi, Harvey. I sure am.
And you are talking to us from the other side of the country. Actually, we got a bi-coastal thing going here with somebody in the middle. Damon is in Washington, D.C. You are in San Luis Obispo, California. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I am in Columbus, Ohio. So we are transcontinental here. But we're just starting to talk with Damon Moglen from Friends of the Earth about the shutdown of San Onofre, which will hopefully be followed very soon, like tomorrow, by the shutdown of the two reactors at Diablo Canyon, thereby making California nuclear free. So let's take first things first. Damon, and we got the whole hour with you two great people, so we're going to go through this step by step and be very thorough about it. Damon, can you tell us, please, after all these decades of campaigning, what finally, I will be very careful not to say we pushed the reactors over the edge, because they are sitting on the edge, and if we push them over the edge, they'd fall into the ocean. So let's say legally and logistically, what happened to finally shut the two reactors at San Onofre?
Well, as I think some folks will remember, that the folks at San Onofre Edison replaced the steam generators. That's the part of these facilities where the steam from the nuclear reactors is run through turbines to produce electricity. And the steam generators at San Onofre were replaced at tremendous cost to the California ratepayer, about $800 million to nearly $1 billion. And incredibly, Edison misdesigned the new steam generators, and they were installed. And in only a matter of months, the steam generators began to malfunction. And in one case, in January of 2012, one of the tubes in one of the steam generators actually broke, and there was a leak of radioactive steam. And at this point, Edison said, well, there's really no big problem here. This is minor. We'll just fix the problem. But over the next few months, it became increasingly clear that this was a massive problem, that they had incorrectly designed the steam generators, and that they were basically flawed, and that they were going to shake themselves apart if the reactors were turned back on. And so over a year and a half, there was a fight from folks around Southern California, different organizations working together, and finally, Edison recognized that that they were not going to be able to restart the reactors, and that they would be forced to pay $1 billion to try to replace the steam generators, and they threw in the towel.
Mind-boggling. Now, what was going to prevent them from reopening?
Mostly
what was the legal regulatory method?
Well, the situation there was that Friends of the Earth brought a suit in which we claimed that in order to restart the plant, they would need to go through a public license amendment process, because it was clear that under their original license, they were not allowed to operate the plant with damaged steam generators. The steam generators were required to be able to operate at 100%, and instead they wanted to operate them intermittently at reduced power, and that was crazy. It was unsafe. It was just a crazy idea, and we were able to prevail, and an Atomic Safety and Licensing Board at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission handed down a hallmark ruling in which they ruled with Friends of the Earth and said that we were completely right, and in order to restart the plant, they'd have to go through a public license amendment process, and Edison quite rightly realized that they would never survive such a licensing process. So they
yes, and you know,
down.
So essentially, what Edison wanted to do was the equivalent of you take your car and you get it fixed, and as you're leaving, the guy says, "Well, don't drive it over 40 miles an hour," right? And then there are all sorts of additional safety problems even when you are driving it at 40 miles an hour. Now, what I want to know is, how did you get any regulatory agency involved with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to hand down a ruling in favor of public safety? I mean, that is really unprecedented.
Well, I think it was. It is a testament to the fact that when we, as critics of the nuclear program, kind of attack these agencies, we have to realize that there are good folks trying to do the right thing in many of these agencies, and that I think in this case, what you had was the three judges on this particular Atomic Safety Licensing Board. These are judges who are hired and paid for by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Realized that this was a completely ludicrous situation, and in as much as they have independence, and they do indeed have both technical and legal independence, I think they read the briefs, they heard the arguments, and they ruled unanimously that we were right, and that in order to run the reactor in this fashion, they had to prove it was safe through a licensing process.
There was
a tremendous amount of public pressure. There were, you know, activists from across Southern California. They were able to, in turn, mobilize policymakers. They were able to get the media to cover the story. So I think that any legal success, as we all know, takes place within the context of public activism and forcing people to focus on the issue. So I think that we shouldn't think that that legal case was won in a vacuum. It wasn't. It was won in the context of terrific citizen action.
Very well said, Damon. Linda Seeley, you've been on the case in San Luis Obispo all these years, but you certainly observed what happened at San Onofre. Can you say something further about that?
Well, I can say that what happened at San Onofre gives us a tremendous amount of hope, because there's a great surge of a public opinion that's turned its eyes toward Diablo Canyon. Since San Onofre shut down, people in California want this state to be nuclear free. They understand that Diablo Canyon is just another Fukushima waiting to happen, and they know that it has to be taken offline, and that we just don't have time. We don't have time to wait to for its license to expire and all that. And so we are getting a lot of help from those people down in Southern California, and Diablo is more in the news than ever. I could talk
And rightly so. And let's jump back to San Onofre for a minute, because I want to make sure we've covered it thoroughly. There were people like Ace Hoffman in San Diego, Donna Gilmore, a huge, beautiful grassroots groundswell that really provided a lot of the what you call, Damon, the public pressure that really made the difference at San Onofre. And by the way, it's very important to understand how hard it is to shut a commercial reactor. I mean, you know, let's put it in a larger context. When I first started with this in 1973, 74, Richard Nixon said there'd be 1,000 reactors in the United States by the year 2000. So there was a giant groundswell, definitely killed off a lot of reactors, prevented the, most importantly, prevented the nuclear industry from getting the kinds of multi-billion dollar, they got plenty of handouts, but not what they really wanted, coming into their coffers. I think the maximum number of reactors that ever got built, maybe you know, Linda or Damon, was around 130. I don't think we ever had in the United States more than 120 or 130 operating simultaneously. When Nixon made the announcement in 1974 that he was going to build 1,000, there were about 250 online, under construction or on order, and from the time he made the speech, the numbers started to drop. So now we're down to 100, and we're down to 100 because 2 years ago in 2012, we shut the two at San Onofre, one at Crystal River in Florida, and what was the other one? The other one escapes my mind real quick. What's that?
Kewaunee.
Now, Kewaunee shut for economic reasons, which was, you know, at Crystal River, the idiots who owned the place tried to fix it themselves. They had some problems, and they cracked their own containment, for God's sakes. But Kewaunee shut for strictly economic reasons. There wasn't much of a movement up there. There was no serious outstanding technical challenges that they seem to face that we knew about. Maybe after we look a couple years, we'll find out they knew something we didn't know. And so four reactors were shut, the two at San Onofre and the two others, the one in Wisconsin and Florida. And then there was agreement in 13, which is just coming to bear now, on the shutdown of Vermont Yankee, thankfully, which is supposed to go down on the 29th. But this shutdown of the two at San Onofre is a huge deal. They are very big reactors. They still are. And Edison, Southern California Edison, was really committed to keeping them open. Right, Damon? I mean, they fought you tooth and nail.
Well, yeah, and they also argued that if the reactors were to go down, that people throughout Southern California were going to be having brownouts and blackouts, and that people were going to be living in caves without air conditioning, and, you know, the whole nine yards of really trying to scare the public into thinking that the choice was between nuclear power, you know, having the lights on and air conditioning on. And that was obviously false. When the reactors went down, there were no blackouts, there were no brownouts, there were no disruptions. And in fact, they were able to really make a go largely through encouraging efficiency activities.
It is astounding. Nowhere in California was there even a noticeable change in the electric supply. Linda, you live in California. Did your lights start to go dim when Santa Rosa was shut down?
Did not dim one iota. And if Diablo shuts down, they won't either. Diablo provides about between 8.5% and 9% of the electricity for California. And we have about at least a 30% excess energy in California than we use. And we are... grid operator insists that we have a 17% overage of capacity than we need. And so if Diablo went offline today, it would not be a blip on the screen. But it would be much safer if the nuclear reaction were stopped and it still, of course, will have all that waste here. But at least if there isn't a nuclear reaction going on, the safety is increased, you know, hundreds of times at that time when it goes offline.
Right. Now, Damon, what has been the economic impact on Southern California Edison and the ratepayers of Southern California with the shutdown of these two giant reactors at San Onofre?
Well, I think it's... in some ways, it's premature to really talk about the true economic impact. I think that this is an area that people are going to argue about, that obviously one of the problems that's faced is that the utilities are interested in trying to replace power from the plant immediately. They're interested in replacing power from San Onofre using gas-fired power plants, which is completely unacceptable and basically means that we would be replacing nuclear with dirty fossil energy, and that's unacceptable. Right now, the proposal in the state is to replace San Onofre's power with a 50% mix renewable and efficiency and a 50% gas-fired power plant mix, and that's really not a solution, and it's not economically right. We actually believe that one of the things that's economically very interesting about San Onofre going down and Diablo going down is that by getting rid of nuclear power, we're actually going to make way for even increased renewable energy, clean, carbon-free renewable energy, solar, wind, energy storage, and efficiency. And I think that what's really exciting in California is that not only do we see the opportunity to replace nuclear power as a failed 20th century energy source, but we really see the opportunity to replace it with 21st century cutting-edge green technology, which is going to be carbon-free and is really going to address our climate change problems. So I think that economically, the boost that California is going to be able to benefit from is going to be in seeing a massive increase in renewable energy, in the production of that energy, the transmission of that energy, and the ways in which that energy can be used and harnessed. So I think we're going to see a tremendous net benefit from the closure of San Onofre and the closure of Diablo as well.
Very good. Now, we're talking with Damon Moglen from Friends of the Earth and Linda Seeley from Mothers for Peace in San Luis Obispo. Linda got arrested at the Diablo Canyon reactor even earlier than I did. Mine was in 84. You were in 81, I think, right, Linda? Is that correct?
No, I was in 84. I moved here in 82.
You were only 14 years old when you were arrested, so you're
10.
Way younger than I am.
Right, right.
Anyway, so, Damon, let's just finish up with San Onofre here. We do have some outstanding issues. Donna Gilmore and others have raised, Ace Hoffman have raised very serious questions about the status of the nuclear waste at San Onofre, and essentially Edison is proposing to put this stuff, these incredibly radioactive spent fuel rods, for lack of a better term, into tin cans. And there's a whole technological argument going on about what to really do with those fuel assemblies. Have you had any sense of what's going to happen with now that Edison is charged with decommissioning these reactors?
Sure. Well, obviously, as you say, Harvey, the issue of nuclear waste and all reactors across this country are just a really, really terrible threat to the environment and public health. And we mustn't forget that every time one of these reactors closes down, it's not the end of the story by any means. the way in which this nuclear waste has been stored and is going to be stored is really unacceptable and is a threat to the public. At San Onofre, I believe that still actually over half of the nuclear waste stored at the plant remains in pools, which is completely unacceptable and is extremely dangerous. If you were to have an earthquake and a loss of coolant capacity at the spent fuel pools like that you almost had at Fukushima, you could have an absolutely devastating nuclear radiological accident, despite the fact that the reactors are not operating there. So in my mind and in Friends of the Earth's mind, we really need to get that fuel most immediately out of the spent fuel ponds and into containers that at least have some increased level of safety. But then, of course, there is the long-term problem about, well, what do you do with the waste? And the bottom line is we actually don't have a solution to it. So the first order of business is let's stop producing more of it. But we strongly feel that the next step is you got to get all that fuel out of the pools and into containers that are at least going to provide some level of greater safety.
Well, that's going to be a very interesting battle, both at San Onofre and all the other reactors around the country. The utilities seem to find it way cheaper and easier just to leave them in these unsafe cooling ponds, which have to be cool. They can't lose power, or we can have even a worse meltdown than from an operating reactor core.
And Harvey, if I could just add, I mean, I think that's something that folks who think about these issues need also to be thinking about is that in the situation we now face with the change in Congress, we're also facing a situation where inevitably there's going to be a big fight over whether or not Yucca Mountain in Nevada is going to be opened. And in turn, I think that one of the things we all have to be thinking about is that if those people who are pushing so hard to get Yucca Mountain opened actually were to succeed, we would be talking about this extraordinarily radioactive nuclear waste being transported all over the country, if that's by road, by rail, by truck, by boat in some cases. But you would be seeing potentially extraordinarily radioactive nuclear waste being transported across the country to Nevada. And I think that this is an emerging risk that all of us need to be thinking about, that all the more emphasizes how important it is to shut down the nuclear power plants to stop producing the fuel in the first place, which is really, quote, the only solution to the nuclear waste problem. Stop producing more of it first.
Couldn't agree with you more. And, of course, I'm pretty sure that when the Republicans take the White House in 2016, the pressure to open Yucca Mountain, of course, now that Harry Reid is not going to be majority leader anymore, it's going to ramp up, but they won't get it past Obama, I don't think. But when Jeb Bush comes in, look out with Yucca Mountain. I've been in Yucca Mountain, by the way. It is one of the few places where you can actually see an earthquake fault coming through the ground. It's insane, but hopefully by then we'll be well enough along to make sure it never opens. Oh, okay, we're going to move on now. We're talking with Damon Mogul and of Friends of the Earth and Linda Seeley from the Mothers for Peace in San Luis Obispo, California. We have just succeeded, thanks to Friends of the Earth and 30, 40 years of dedicated activism by people in Southern California, the successful shutdown of two reactors. I think it's the only time in U.S. history, actually, where we shut two at the same time. There's a good record. Next comes Oconee in South Carolina with three. But let's move on to the double reactors now at Diablo Canyon in San Luis Obispo. Now, San Luis Obispo is halfway, more or less, between L.A. and San Diego.
San Francisco.
I'm sorry, San Francisco. You're right. The San Onofre is between LA and San Diego. San Onofre between around 9 miles due west of San Luis Obispo, which has become a pretty substantially sized town, the home of Cal Poly. And what's the other college in San Luis Obispo?
Cuesta College. It's a junior college, 10,000 students.
And they're what, 25,000 at Cal Poly?
23,000, So we've got 33,000 students here. And we have
I had a really good friend, and her daughter turned out to be a math whiz. Nobody knows how that happened. And she was applying to Cal Poly, and I told her parents, who didn't listen to me, to not send her to Cal Poly because I would not want my child living directly downwind from Diablo Canyon. But thankfully, she's graduated now, and hopefully everything's okay. So let's talk about Diablo Canyon now. Linda, as a local resident, what are your primary concerns about the two reactors at Diablo? These are very big reactors, by the way. They're over 1,200 megawatts. I don't think they're any bigger in the United States, maybe slightly, but they're certainly on the top tier in size of reactors in the United States. You've been living downwind there for decades. Tell us what's going through your mind about San Luis Obispo and Diablo Canyon.
Well, the biggest safety concern we have here are the earthquake faults. We've got at least 13 earthquake faults right around Diablo Canyon, and two of those are major active earthquake faults. And PG&E just put out its own new seismic study. They just published it September 10th. And strikingly, in their own report, which is 1,800 pages long, they reveal that the Hosgri fault, which is the fault that we knew about when the plant opened, which is 3.5 miles offshore of the plant. Subsequent to that, in 2008, a new fault was discovered.
Linda, are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit. Linda, I think you need to go to a landline maybe if you're on a cell phone. It's a little hard to... You're going in and out on us. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll listen to Dana Lyon singing the Solartopia song, the Rocky Top version. We'll come back in just about a minute, and hopefully we'll have this technical problem with Linda. Well, this is settled. This is when we usually take a break anyway. We'll be about 3 minutes, Damon, and we'll be right back with Damon Mogun from Friends of the Earth talking about shutting down the Diablo Canyon nuclear reactors.
New plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams, Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan, oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam, road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia, it's time to get a better plan. Home sweet home to me, Solartopia, that's the future for me, green powered energy, windmills, hydrogen, photovoltaic cells with solar panels everywhere, solar cars, fast trains, bicycles, hydroplanes, get you home in under an hour.
Baby, that's the great Dana Lyons, my brother, singing the Solartopia song. Dana, most famous for Cows with Guns, his anthem for the vegetarian movement, and everything's good. I hope you're back with us, Damon Mogun at Friends of the Earth.
Hi there.
Okay, and Linda, did you get back with us?
I got back on. I guess something happened there. Sorry.
PG&E, since we switched from San Onofre to PG&E Diablo Canyon, PG&E is probably jamming the line. So if your lights go out, you'll know what the problem is. So, Dana, I was asking you, Linda has laid out some of the realities of the earthquake situation, but we've had some new developments. Can you tell us about this?
Well, yeah, I think that the new information that Linda was talking about is really scary. It's now clear that Diablo is really surrounded by faults that are both far larger and are interconnected. And what this really means is that the design of Diablo Canyon, which was done all the way back in the 1960s, is simply not capable of withstanding the serious earthquake risk that now exists in the area, and that furthermore, because of the way the license for a nuclear reactor is put together, the plant is now operating clearly outside of its license. And if we had a serious independent regulatory agency in the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they would be stopping the plant from operating unless it was able to prove that it actually can withstand the very serious new earthquake risk that exists. So I think once again we've really got to pull together a movement led, of course, by our friends and Mothers for Peace and others in San Luis Obispo, and really put the pressure on, demanding from public officials and the regulatory agencies that they address these really, really serious issues that indicate that the plant is simply not capable of withstanding the serious seismic activity that exists in the area.
Now, you helped uncover a report from inside the NRC dealing with seismic issues there. Can you tell us about this?
Well, yeah. You know, the former resident inspector at the plant, a guy named Michael Peck, Dr. Michael Peck, was really disturbed by this new seismic information, and he wrote a report, so-called non-concurrence, in which he basically said that he didn't agree with the way that the agency was handling and the utility was handling the matter, and that he felt that they really needed to be responding to this new seismic information. And his supervisors said, well, no, we disagree, and basically go away. And instead, I think really in the finest tradition of a true public servant, Dr. Peck filed a so-called dissenting professional opinion in which he once again argued at length that this new seismic data meant that the plant was operating without a valid license and that it needed to be shut down until that could be resolved, and if it could be resolved. And instead of dealing with Dr. Peck's concerns in a timely fashion, the NRC effectively suppressed his report for over 14 months, did nothing about the claims in his report. And I actually think that it's quite possible that if the media had not picked up on the story, Associated Press ran a great article on the report. I think to this day, none of this might have come to light. But I think that now the problem really is that we have all of these issues out in the public, and yet the NRC is doing nothing about them, and nobody is holding PG&E accountable for running a plant with an invalid license.
Linda Seeley and San Luis Obispo, you want to comment on that?
Well, yeah, there's a tremendous amount of collusion between the NRC and the utilities, and that it's been shown over and over and over again that this is true. And here at Diablo Canyon, PG&E and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission have a very cozy relationship. One issue is that the PG&E released its seismic report, which, as Damon said, is absolutely terrifying about the possibility of the kind of earthquake that they could have there. In the concluding pages of their report, the interesting thing about it is that they say, despite all of these, you know, incredibly horrific scenarios that we've outlined in this thing that of what could happen at Diablo Canyon, everything's fine. Nothing is going to happen. The probability is so low that we are not even worried about it, right? So there's that report. And then interestingly enough, exactly 1 hour from the time PG&E released that report, the NRC released its own report about Dr. Michael Peck's findings that the plant was operating outside of its license, saying that discrediting his report. So we find it very curious, and we find it absolutely almost spooky that these two entities could have released their reports 1 hour apart. So we have very deep suspicions that perhaps they were colluding and helping each other so that they could kind of buffer each other when they released these reports. So we're looking into that and trying to discern this pattern, because PG&E has also been in collusion with the California Public Utilities Commission over blowing up, killing eight people in San Bruno and blowing up 38 houses because of poor maintenance of their gas pipe up in San Bruno. So this is this very same company that we're trying, that we're trusting with nuclear power. And we in Mothers for Peace find it extremely uncomfortable to think about that kind of a company having such a tremendous amount of responsibility over the safety of half a million people.
So what is the legal upshot of this now? We have established that the two reactors at Diablo Canyon are surrounded by God knows how many earthquake faults. Linda, I've heard you say 15. Is that right?
13.
Okay, we don't want to exaggerate. It's only 13.
We don't know. Yeah,
it's right. 45 miles from the San Andreas Fault, the right. infamous San Andreas Fault, which is half the distance that the earthquake fault that destroyed Fukushima was from Fukushima. Now, where does this translate legally? Friends of the Earth has taken some legal steps to deal with this, and can you talk about them, Damon Mogan, please, from Friends
sure.
of the Earth?
So, first of all, on the basis of Dr. Peck's criticism that Diablo is now operating without a valid license, Friends of the Earth has brought a petition before the NRC in which we've argued that the plant is operating outside of its license and that that the way that the agency is dealing with it is unacceptable, that the plant should be shut down and that there needs to be a license amendment review conducted, and that we maintain that that's a review that the public has a right to be involved in, and that's what we're demanding in that case. But there's another case, which is, I think, in some ways even more remarkable, which is that in rejecting Dr. Peck's dissenting professional opinion, PG&E and the NRC reveal for the first time that secretly, and we believe illegally, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in September of 2013 actually agreed to a change in Diablo Canyon's license in an effort to basically make it look like, in fact, the plant is designed to withstand these new earthquake faults that have been identified. And under the NRC's own rule and under the federal law, in order to make those changes in a license, you need to conduct, once again, a full public licensing process that would involve adjudicated public hearings that the public can be involved in. The documents are made available. There can be a real review and a real critical appraisal. And instead, the NRC and PG&E, behind closed doors, agreed to these illegal changes in the license and went ahead and made those changes, and only subsequently announced a year later that they had done so. So Friends of the Earth has brought a case before the U.S. Court of Appeals in which we've asked for administrative review of that decision, which we believe is both unacceptable under the NRC's own rules, but is also illegal under the federal law. And that case is only now really getting underway. There's going to be an initial effort, I think, by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and PG&E to try to get the case thrown out of court, arguing that this isn't really a complete decision and the court should let them kind of do their thing. And if we are able to force through in these next months, there's going to be a hearing before the appeals court. And if that hearing takes place, we have every belief that we can win in that case and that the plant could be shut down pending a full license review. And we don't believe that that they can succeed in a licensing review, that these seismic faults are such that nobody now would suggest building a brand new nuclear reactor at that site. So how in the world can we talk about operating 1960-era decrepit equipment in what has got to be the worst possible place in the United States to operate nuclear power plants? It's just, it's insane.
And there are miles and miles and miles of underground pipes there, Harvey, that were installed in the late 60s and early 70s that have been, that are, have been subjected to lots of earthquakes. We've had tons of earthquakes here. We have them all the time. And even little earthquakes make things get a little bit jiggly. And it has, you know, it would be absolutely unthinkable right now, according to the NRC's own regulations, to ever propose a nuclear plant on such a site. They wouldn't allow it. And yet they allow this thing to go on operating.
Well, Harvey, could I just add something? I just want to add something to what Linda's just said, which I think is absolutely right on target, which is, you know, I'd like people to just think for a moment about what equipment you use on a daily basis that comes from 1968. You know,
right.
Do you have a toaster from 1968? Are you driving a car from 1968? Are you using a radio from 1968? And yet, the nuclear industry, and PG&E in this case, wants us to believe that a nuclear reactor designed in the 1960s, subjected to the intense radiation of decades of operation, earthquake activity, the elements, the tremendous heat that exists inside of a nuclear reactor itself, we're supposed to believe that after those decades, that machine, and it's only a machine, is supposed to withstand these extraordinary earthquake faults. It's a crazy scenario, and there really is something wrong with the idea that the public is made to believe that we have to accept this risk in order to have electricity, which we could be producing with wind and solar. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it does if you were making $1 million a day on each reactor, which PG&E seems to be. And that's actually one of the issues we're going to be looking into, I assume, Damon and Linda Seeley. Are they actually making money at Diablo Canyon? I have heard rumor that they're losing money there. Is that possible?
Well, we've also brought a case before the California Public Utility Commission asking them to conduct an investigation into this very issue. I think that if you actually look at the economic reality of the situation, we're going to need to spend billions of dollars to try to bring about safety upgrades on these decrepit 1960-era reactors. And in terms of producing electricity that's both safe, clean, and economically realistic, nuclear power fails on all three levels. The fact is that the power that's necessary from Diablo Canyon can absolutely be produced by solar and wind with energy storage at a price absolutely competitive to the kind of prices that we would be talking about if we're going to have to install billions of dollars of safety upgrades and retrofits on basically 1960 technology. So I actually think that the economics here run in favor of renewable, clean, carbon-free energy and absolutely not in support of dirty, outdated nuclear technology.
Well, how does this end? Your legal action, how does it end in a shutdown at Diablo? You've gone to the appeals court in Washington, D.C., is that correct? To
yes.
Force a licensing procedure. And is it your belief that PG&E would follow through and do what's needed to be done, or would they just throw in the towel if they're forced to deal with seismic issues there?
Well, I think at the end of the day, the San Onofre example is an interesting one because ultimately, let's not forget that it was Edison itself that decided to throw in the towel, that the money simply didn't make sense anymore. And I truly believe that that's what's going to knock over Diablo Canyon as well. I think that it is now clear that this is a plant operating in violation of its license. and that the plant needs to be shut down until they can prove that they can operate safely. And the bottom line is, once we get into a public review, it's going to be clear that unless you try to radically rebuild this plant, and I'm not even convinced that's possible, you can't continue to operate. And I don't think that the public, and most importantly, the ratepayers of California, are going to want to pump billions of dollars into decrepit, outdated 40-year-old nuclear reactors as compared with putting that money into solar and wind technology of the 21st century that, after all, they're going to own. There's going to be no fuel cost. And once you've paid off the cost of building the panels, building the wind, you're going to have free power. And this is an extraordinary difference. And I think we are going to begin to realize that, in fact, the economics run in support of renewable energy and not in support of nuclear power.
I mean, are you telling me that it won't be possible for them to just jack up the plant and put a couple of tires underneath?
Well, I think there will be people who will argue that that's what should happen. But as Linda was saying earlier, I think the bottom line here is that people are going to wake up and realize that you can't build new reactors at Diablo Canyon. So why in the world would you want to operate 1960-era decrepit, broken-down reactors at the same site? It's just not going to make sense. And that's how come I think the industry fights tooth and nail against having public hearings and public review. Because if you actually conduct those hearings in the public with full access, they don't work. You're just not going to survive such a hearing.
Okay, so we've got two issues going then. We've got the seismic issue, and what other issues do we have that are going on with Diablo Canyon? I know there's a multiplicity of challenges going. Friends of the Earth, you're doing two, right? You're doing the seismic, and there was another one.
The economic economic argument before the Public Utility Commission. But at the
You are in front of the California Public Utilities Commission. Tell us about that, please.
Well, so, you know, the same thing actually happened with San Onofre, that the Public Utility Commission did launch an investigation into what had happened with the steam generators, because after all, over $800 million of ratepayer money was invested in malfunctioning equipment that should never have been designed and installed. So, quite rightly, the Utility Commission said, hang on a minute, this needs to be investigated, and an investigation was begun. And I think that the threat of that investigation played very heavily on Edison, that they realized that they could be forced to repay the money for the defective equipment, let alone be forced to pay themselves $800 million or $1 billion to replace the defective steam generators that they'd installed. And I think the situation here could be very similar. I think that the fact of the matter is that despite PG&E's statements that they make money out of these reactors, the fact is the ratepayers are losing money continuing to operate these reactors. And I think that it's the responsibility of the Public Utility Commission to really get a grip on that. If PG&E says it wants to run these reactors not just for years but for decades to come, the public deserves to know what makes the most economic sense. And I think that in a fair debate, in a fair situation with full public hearings, it's going to be clear that renewable energy is not only cleaner and safer, it's actually going to cost less.
Yes, and that was what I realized you hadn't mentioned that, the proceeding in front of the PUC. But there's another thing going on the state level, which is the once-through cooling issue. Linda Seeley in San Luis Obispo, can you talk about that as well, please, at Diablo Canyon?
Okay, so Diablo Canyon, the way that it stays cool, the way it keeps from melting down, is that it uses the Pacific Ocean as its source for cooling water. They have pumps that suck in 2.5 billion gallons of water every day from the Pacific. And with that sucking in of the water, they also suck in all of the larval fish, all the small plankton, the very basic parts of the aquatic life on the coast. And Diablo Canyon is responsible for 78% of the loss of marine life on the California coast because of this cooling. So they bring it in through the plant as it goes around the reactor, which is very hot, and that's why they bring it around there. It warms up, and when it's just discharged back into the ocean, it's 20 degrees hotter than it was when it came in. And it also is allowed to have, you know, small amounts of tritium in it, which is radioactive hydrogen. It has heavy metals in it. It is not clean water, as Diablo, as PG&E loves to proclaim. And so so the California, Damon, help me out here. Is it the Energy Commission that ordered it?
So the
I think it is.
Yeah, the rule is that the Water Board of the state of California has to make a decision about protecting the marine environment, and California has a terrific coastal protection policy, which says all coastal power plants have to go off that old kind of cooling system, the once-through cooling system. They have to go off that system in order to protect the environment. And PG&E is arguing, no, we should be exempted from that, despite, as Linda says, this is a plant that's producing 78% of the damage of all of the coastal power plants combined. So the Water Board of the state needs to be assessing what they're going to do, and we're very hopeful that they're going to go ahead and apply the state's policy and force PG&E to get off this antiquated once-through cooling system that's doing tremendous damage to the marine environment.
Now, conceivably, we have had this issue before. It was instrumental, actually, in forcing a deal at Oyster Creek in New Jersey, where that reactor will be forced to shut, or will we hope. I mean, utilities have a great track record here of backing out of their agreements. It's an issue also at New York City at Indian Point with once-through cooling, where they're killing zillions of sea creatures. The question is, at Diablo Canyon, as at Indian Point, could they build cooling towers that would put them in compliance with the water quality requirements?
Yes.
And what would that cost?
A huge variety of price tags have been put on it, from, I think, about $1.5 billion all the way up to $12 billion, if I'm not mistaken. So who knows how much they'll cost. But the fact is that it's PG&E's problem. It's not the problem of the ratepayers or anyone else. They built this thing. They put in the once-through cooling. It's their responsibility. It's just like your car. You know, it's got 150,000 miles on it, and your radiator goes out. Who's responsible for paying for it? Toyota or you? Well, you are, right?
I also want to add that I completely agree with what Linda's saying. And in addition, when we talk about the true cost of nuclear power, this is part of the true cost of nuclear power. The nuclear industry thinks it deserves to be able to pump billions of gallons of water out of the ocean and pump it back in much hotter, and in the course of it, destroying billions of sea creatures. And they think they don't need to pay for any of that. Well, that is part of the cost of nuclear power. And that really does need to be compared with what is the cost of operating a solar panel or a wind turbine. And the fact is, there is none of this kind of massive collateral damage and misuse of natural resources, let alone the massive risk of nuclear waste that we would have to deal with for tens of thousands of years, and what's the cost of that. So this is really also part of the argument about the environmental, public health, and economic cost of nuclear power. And when you factor the true costs in, nuclear power is simply not competitive with clean, renewable energy.
So we've got rate issues, we've got seismic issues, we've got once-through cooling issues at Diablo Canyon. What else we got? What's going to work to shut these two reactors down?
Well, we've got the suit that the Mothers for Peace filed with several other environmental groups about the NRC's failure to comply with the court ruling on waste storage. We have a huge issue all over the country with storing this highly radioactive nuclear waste. The radioactive waste, I mean, they use these terms that are so misleading. You know, you say nuclear waste, oh, it's just like used up nuclear stuff. No, the nuclear waste is about a million times more radioactive than it was when it went into the reactor. When it comes out, it's so much more radioactive, so hot. It's so giving off so much radiation, and it has to be stored safely for an infinite amount of time, 100,000 million years, whatever. We have no clue of how to store that waste, and so it's irresponsible of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to allow it to be continued to be made because there's nowhere to put it. And so we have a case against. We have filed a petition with the NRC with these other groups to not allow the relicensing of any plants or any new plants to come online until they've figured that out. But they'll never figure it out. So we've got that one, and then let's see, what else is going on here?
Damon, do you have a hook? There's other political things going on, I think, with Diablo. But the question that I think is most arisen, and we're almost out of time, you guys have been fantastically informative here, is the question of renewable energy. Is renewable energy in California now cheaper than even the continued operation of Diablo Canyon?
Well, I think the simple answer is yes. It's not a simple question, though. And what we really need to deal with is, what's the true cost of the nuclear power? What's the true cost of storing nuclear waste for tens of thousands of years? What's the true cost of decimating the marine resources off the coast right there and sucking in billions of fish over years? What are the true costs of the radiation that winds up getting into the environment through so-called small accidents, and yet it has long-term implications? So, you know, if you factor the true cost of nuclear power in and you compare that with the decreasing cost of renewable energy, solar, wind, energy storage, the fact is that renewable energy is absolutely competitive and becomes more and more competitive against nuclear power, and it has none of the risks of nuclear power.
And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the risk. We're going to have to end there. You've been tremendous guests. Damon Moglen, Friends of the Earth, Linda Seeley from Mothers for Peace in San Luis Obispo, California, about shutting the two reactors. I'm going to conclude with the fact that the other hidden cost is the danger to the rest of us. I have two grandsons in Los Angeles, a son and a daughter and a son-in-law with solar panels on their house, and we're not going to stand for this. So we will continue to talk with you guys. Fantastic to have you on. Diablo Canyon, we will shut you down. This has been the Solartopia show, a Green Power show, and we are going to be back with you next week with still more on how to make this world green and survivable.
Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.